we want to engage your imagination. We want you to imagine with us. And we're going to ask you a series of questions, and we want you not to just hear them in your head, but open your imagination and open your heart, because what we want to do is set a context here, and we'll set a foundation for where we're going, because what we are talking about is the difference between success and failure in a way that is pervasive around the country and around the world, and you may not have heard this approach, and we're delighted to present it. So, open your imagination, and here is our first question for you. What would it be like to never again have to be burdened by feeling like a failure? Now, I'm going to repeat that. What would your life be like if you never had to worry about failing again? How would you feel? And we're asking you during the course of this call that when we ask you a question, how would you feel? That is a literal question. How would you feel? Let yourself become engaged with us and participate in this exchange.
And what if you could know with certainty, that in everything you set out to accomplish, you would always be a success? What if you could know there was a priceless pearl waiting at the heart of your every endeavor?
And what if you possessed a secret map, a map that was yours and yours alone, that gave you the edge in any situation?
What if you could trust that your life would continually be fulfilling, be fun, and be an ongoing adventure, taking you into more and more success all the time?
And what if all that could be true for you every day?
Does all that just sound outrageous? I mean, does it sound like we're just spewing a lot of hyperbole and hype? Well, we guarantee you it's not. And even more, there is no such thing as failure. I'm going to say that again. That's the topic tonight. There is no such thing as failure.
Okay, we want to make this an experience for you, not just something that you listen with your brain, but listen with your whole body and your feelings and your soul and your spirit. So to set a foundation for that, what we want to know, first of all, we're going to let you know a little bit about us. So you know where we're coming from. And that, in fact, what we are talking about is not something we read out of a book. It's something that we have had to live through. Our discoveries are products of our living life. Living life together, and our product, they are products of our having gone through the ups and downs and the challenges of trying to make our success work. So for the last 19 years, we have specialized in helping people understand, cope with, and get beyond the debilitating feelings of failure. I'm going to repeat that as well. Get beyond the debilitating feelings. You notice I'm emphasizing feelings, the debilitating feelings of failure. We're a psychology team, and we're known for going deep into the heart of what makes for success, whether it's in your work life or wealth building or relationships or health and fitness, any area of your life, and even more important, what makes for failure. Not only what makes for success, but what makes for failure, or another way of saying it, and this is really critical, what failure really is.
And why has that been our primary focus? Because we've had to go there ourselves to get to where we are now. We've had to go there. We had to address it in our marriage early on, and we've now been married for 18 years, and we had to address it in our career aspirations when we were starting out.
So what you're about to hear is not theory, and it's not wishful thinking, and we can assure you it works, because it's worked for us and a lot of people that we have worked with to make it work for them. And you're going to hear stories from our life as we go through this evening when we were in the pits. Scott, who was broke and living in a tent. I never lived in a tent, but I was really close. So what we're asking you is to get ready and let what we have to say work for you.
All right, so now bring to mind, we want you to participate, so bring to mind a situation in the past where at the end of what you were going through, you believed that you had failed. You had attempted something. It didn't work. And when it was over, you felt like you were a failure. Let yourself remember that sense of loss, the grief, the pain, perhaps your sense of incompetence, maybe even impotence. Maybe you felt hopeless, you'd lost direction, and you knew you'd lost some important ambition. What felt like defeat may have stopped you dead in your tracks. Take a couple of seconds, if you have a notepad handy, to jot down these responses that you're remembering. And you may want to take some notes later on. But keep this situation of yours in mind, because we're going to ask you to use it as your personal work example as we move along.
Yeah, just so you actually have an experience here, you can hear a lot of information, and we could give you a lot of information, and it would just hit your head, and sometimes it hits our heads, you know, and bounces to the floor and burns brown spots in the carpet. It doesn't get in. The reason we're asking you to bring this situation to mind is because we want you to have something personal that you are referencing, so that when we ask questions as we go along and make the points, you can refer to the situation and say, oh, that was me, or that was what it was like, or I remember that, so that it actually becomes an experience for you. So keeping that situation in mind, I'm going to go through simply some definitions of failure. And by the way, there is no such thing as failure, and we will prove that, but we're going to start with what most people believe failure is. And we're going to take it from Webster's Dictionary. And Webster's Dictionary says failure is the state or fact of lacking or being insufficient, in other words, falling short. So the primary idea here is that of lack. Now, refer that back to your own experience. Was there a feeling of lack? May not have been, but there may have been. Another concept and another definition of failure is losing power or strength or weakening. Now, the primary idea here is that of power. In the situation that you brought to mind, was there a sense of impotence? Was there a sense of powerlessness? Some sense of inability in that sense?
A loss of power.
The another definition is not doing, neglect or an omission of something. And the primary idea here is absence. Did you not do in that situation? Was there something you didn't know, something you didn't have that caused the situation you have in mind to, in your estimation, come down? Another one is not succeeding in doing or becoming something. So the idea there is an issue of completion. Success has to do with completion. You must complete things to be successful. You set out to do something and you complete it in the situation you brought to mind. Did you not complete it? Did you start? Were you worried? Did you not go forward? Or merely, like in my case, in stories I'll tell you in just a few minutes, there was just a sense of collapse. Another definition is a person or thing that does not succeed. Well, that's sort of obvious, but the focus point here is on the doer, the person that did not succeed. Were you not a doer? Or were you a doer up to a point? Or were you an overdoer so that there might have been a sense of desperation or something? Also, the next definition is becoming bankrupt. That's a sense of being empty. You reach inside the vault and there's nothing there. You go to the vault and there's nothing there, and we're going to tell you why there's nothing there when you go to the vault as we go through. And one more, it's a failure in education or failing to pass, and the idea there is that you're not meeting up to a standard. You didn't pass, you didn't make the grade, and that's a possibility that in your situation might have occurred. And what we're going to ask you to do, and we're going to keep asking you throughout the entire hour, is how do you feel emotionally in your body, not just thinking, but how do you feel? Do you get squirmy, or do you get sad, or do you smile? What is the feeling as you listen to those definitions of sense of lack, sense a loss of power, a sense of absence, the lack of completion, not being a doer, an overdoer, that there was bankruptcy, and you didn't meet a standard? How do you feel when you take those ideas and you apply them toward the situation that you made your work study for tonight?
Well, we'll bet that you probably didn't feel too great listening to what Jim took you through. But what if you didn't have to go down? What if you could understand the idea of failure at a much deeper level than Webster's is putting forth, and that we ordinarily think of it, and see that it's not really a failure at all? What if the experience you're focused on was not really a failure at all? Not at all. In fact, what if you knew that you were never, ever failing? In fact, you are always succeeding. The question is, at what? Now that is the pivotal sentence, the pivotal thought, the pivotal idea that we want you to grasp from tonight. You are always succeeding. The question is, at what?
Now, that may sound a little crazy. That may sound like a lot of New Age baloney, about going with the flow and trusting that everything in the universe is perfect and all of those things. It may sound a lot like that. Maybe you think we're going to preach about positive thinking. It's all about positive thinking or finding the pony in the pile of you-know-what. And for those of you who don't know the pony in the pile parable, the pessimist sees only the pile. The optimist knows that if there's a pile, there's got to be a pony around here somewhere. And that's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about that sense of success, that there is a value around it somewhere, and we're not talking about going with the flow, although that's possible, trusting that everything's perfect. That too may be real, but that's not what we're talking about. We're going to get into an idea here that is absolutely real about how failure comes to be, and on the corollary, how success comes to be.
We're going to help you open your eyes and your heart to all the ways you've been succeeding in your life but thinking you were a failure, just like we had to learn about ourselves, and we're going to share that with you. So bring to mind that failure from your past. Keep it clear in your mind, because now we're going to walk you through a process to identify how that situation of yours was actually a success. And we want you to focus very seriously on these questions. How did the end result of your failed efforts reflect back to you something you were told about yourself or about the world, about the ways of the world, or mirrored some way you were treated when you were growing up? I'm going to say that again. How did the end result of your failed efforts reflect back to you something you were told about yourself, about who you are, your value, your self-worth, your capability, or about the world, about the ways of the world, or mirrored some way you were treated when you were growing up? Really let this question and the questions we're about to ask you open up inside of you. And jot down a couple of notes in response to each of the questions we're about to ask.
Here's a story from my life. I came from a household that was emotionally cold, and my father, who I had a wonderful relationship with as I grew older and he grew older, but in the beginning it was rough because my father came from a background where he was seriously brutalized. He was actually a very brilliant man, but emotionally he had been crushed. So what he used to say to me, not to my brother, to me, he used to say to me, there will be only one genius in this house, and that's going to be me, my father, not Jim, but it's my father speaking, saying, Jim, there's only one genius in this house, and it's going to be me. Well, I loved my father, and I wanted my relationship with my father to be warm and inviting and as close as I could get. I wanted his trust. I wanted his respect. And so, now this was all pretty much unconscious. There was no conscious decision going on here. I didn't realize a lot of this until I looked back and saw it. But when he said there will be only one genius in this house and it will be me, my response out of my love for him and my need of him and my need of his self, of his respect and his esteem of me, was to say, okay, only one genius in this house? Great, you're it. Now, I never made that as a conscious choice. I made it as an unconscious, non-rational choice, an emotional choice. So look what happened. I was a Hellion in primary school, from one kindergarten to eighth grade. I was a hellion. They really had trouble controlling me. Then I went to a Jesuit high school, which was the top high school in the city of Detroit where I was raised, and I entered that school in the top of my class. And I finished 4 years later at the bottom of my class. Now, if you all were watching that, would you consider that a failure? Most people would. Then I went on to college, and I graduated with a 2.1 out of a 4-point system. Was that a failure? A lot of people would have thought I didn't apply myself. By the way, I went back to school in my middle 30s, and I graduated with a summa cum laude, and I did 5 years worth of work in 4 years, and then went on and got a PhD, and it was all a skate. It was a piece of cake when I did it that time. But in that first go-round, was I failing? Now, listen to this really carefully. Was I failing, or was I succeeding at keeping the deal that I had made non-rationally with my father? And what I learned is that's what I was doing. So when I went from the top of my class to the bottom of my class, I was not failing. I was succeeding. It was perverse. It was inside out. But what I was doing was keeping the promise I had made to my father that he would be the king of the hill. So we ask you the question. We're making the statement, you're always succeeding. You are never failing. You're always succeeding. But the question is, at what? And that's the critical thing you need to answer.
So Jim was being a very, very successful son.
Correct.
When he got poor grades. Now, an example from my background, actually I'm going to tell a couple because one from my childhood and one from adulthood. I very much identified with my father far more than my mother. My dad was very dynamic and creative and he had a big personality and I adored him. And my brother was 3.5 years younger than I, and I'm probably 7 or 8 years old when this happens, and my brother's 4 or 5, and we have on little painter's shirts and painter hats from the paint store, and we're out in the back, and we're going to help Daddy paint this new fence. I am so excited. I am so thrilled. And within a few minutes, my dad's got a hold of my wrist, and he's trying to teach me how to paint like a professional painter. And I'm frustrating him because I can't get my wrist to work like a proper painting person. And the next thing I know, he has whipped the paintbrush out of my hand, taken off my painter's hat, and he says, "That's enough. You go in the house and go help your mom." I was devastated. I wanted to be a helper. Now, there were lots of those instances, and I became a very poor learner. You can understand why. I became just like he taught me I should be, that if I didn't get it right away, I needed to go back in the house. And unconsciously, I was loyal my whole life. I'm only in the last maybe 5 years becoming a pretty good learner because I got on top of what that was all about.
So the point we're making here is that when you really understand yourself consciously and unconsciously, you're not failing. And when you're succeeding, both consciously and unconsciously, you are succeeding, but you're never failing because what you're doing is you're succeeding, but the question is, at what? And we're going to repeat that question over and over again.
And I just want to make a comment, since I said I would give an example from adulthood. When we did our first self-healing audio tape, many years ago, my dad was still alive, my dad's first response was, how can you do that? You don't know anything about that. That's crazy. He just went into a rant. It threatened him so much. He hadn't changed. I had changed. I moved on, but he still exploded. So be aware of those kinds of responses when you start to move out and move ahead and break through areas where you've been blocked.
Because it won't just be the people in your family or your neighborhood or your church or your whatever. You will find those people in the world in order to keep that pattern going. So a lot of people are confused by it. They go to work at a corporation and they have this horrible boss. We have worked with people over 20 years almost 20 years, and to the person, you can trace it back that when you find a horrible boss, you are actually, you and the boss are doing a dance together that you are contributing to because of your need to be in some kind of situation that's reflected by this horrible boss. Here's another question for you. How did the end result of your, quote, failed efforts How did the end result of your failed efforts keep you in the same lifestyle as your family and your neighborhood where you grew up, rather than moving you into a change that would take you beyond your roots? Now, we have talked about family. This doesn't just apply to family. This can happen when you're 30 and 40, and you can have something occur that locks in and you don't want to move forward, but the easiest way to describe this is with respect to where you came from. And I come from my grandparents were peasants from eastern Poland, and my mother and father were first generation, I'm second generation. So we were basically peasants. I refer to the area in Detroit I lived in as a suburb of Warsaw. It was intensely Polish, but more importantly than that, it was intensely peasant-like. And all of the people in my family worked for other people, and they worked long hours, and they all hated it. And my Uncle Al always said that work was for the weak, and you only did it to get to Saturday. All you did was work to get to Saturday, because for 2 days of their 2 days of their week, they were free, and then they went back into what they considered drudgery. So I was an actor, a stage actor, and a Hollywood actor for a number of years, and I get to Hollywood, and I am making tremendous strides, and I'm getting really good roles, and then I get a particular plum, and my agent takes me to the Brown Derby. It was the symbol of Hollywood. It's a restaurant that was symbolized Hollywood, and he took me there to create a Hollywood event so that I could sign my first real plum contract in the Brown Derby. And I couldn't wait to get out of there. I couldn't wait to get out of there because my unconscious allegiance was still very heavily tied to that peasant neighborhood. And by going to the Brown Derby, I was stepping way, way out of bounds. So was I failing when I had to get out of the Brown Derby? The answer is no. What I was really doing was succeeding at remaining loyal to my roots, which eventually I turned over. But therein, if somebody came to me, and believe me, I did enough therapy as a complete and total failure, which is what I thought I was, until it all became clear that what I was actually doing was succeeding at maintaining something that was deeper in my unconscious than the idea of a contract at Brown Derby, and that was where I came from and the roots that belonged to me.
We hope that you can hear that what we're talking about is largely unconscious. It's not that you set out to do these things that sabotage the success that you claim you want. Not at all. The unconscious is ruling a lot of your behavior. I, too, was an actress after college. I went back to New York. I went to UCLA, and I moved back to New York City. And I did a lot of commercials and industrials. I had 4 agents. I was very successful at it. And I would often get sent on auditions for Broadway plays or soap operas, and I wouldn't go. Why? Well, I rationalized that I really wanted to get married, and I probably didn't want to stay in New York, and I'd heard that they demanded contracts of 3 years to 7 years. Not that I ever checked that out, of course. So I would call up the audition, and I would say that my aunt was dying, and I couldn't go, because I didn't want my agents to know I wasn't going. I believed my own stories that I didn't want to go on those interviews because I wanted to get married. The fact of the matter, years later, that I could see was real, was had I moved up another notch, had I become a successful soap opera actress, as Jim said about the Brown Derby, I would have completely left my lower middle class roots. I grew up near the L.A. Airport. My dad sold used cars. If I'd become a successful soap opera star, I would have completely catapulted myself out of that neighborhood into an entirely different lifestyle. Unconsciously, that was not allowed. So was I failing when I canceled out on those auditions? No. I was succeeding at staying loyal to where I'd come from.
Now, you want to be able to have the soap opera contract, and you want to be able to have the Hollywood contract, or whatever that is a parallel for you in your world. We're absolutely, and we're totally 100% supportive of you getting those plums and moving well beyond wherever it is your roots began your life. But the point we are making here, it's not about what we didn't do. It's about what we did do. And if you really want to understand why you are where you are, you have to look at what you're doing, not what you're not doing, because what you're doing will lead you to the motives that actually are operative in your life. And you can get an understanding, particularly if you're feeling stuck. And by the way, we have worked with corporate and Hollywood executives, people at very high levels of the corporate world, And they too suffer from these problems. They just don't say it as much as the rest of us do because it doesn't bode well for their positions. But behind closed doors and in therapeutic offices, they make the same claims. Everybody struggles with this in one way or another simply because it's the nature of the way the conscious and unconscious mind works. So we want to support your success. We are 100% behind your success, but you cannot imagine and fantasize and dream about your success and not pay attention to what's actually going on, particularly if you're stuck. Particularly if you're stuck.
Now, the next question we want to ask you is, how did the end result of your, in quotes, failed efforts keep you feeling the same way about yourself as you felt about yourself a long time ago? Let's say when you were in high school or even earlier. How did the results now, in this memory you're having of something in your past, resemble in the way that you end up feeling about yourself, how you felt about yourself early? Well, certainly, when I couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting married, and I did not marry Jim, Jim's my one and only husband, I didn't marry him until my early 40s, and I was not waiting. I was frustrated, I was depressed, I was anxious, I was, in many ways, I felt out of it. I was a bridesmaid for four of my friends. It seemed just like it was, if I look back in high school, I was depressed, I was anxious, how come I wasn't dating the popular guys in high school, and I felt kind of isolated. It was very much the same feeling.
Now, the last question we're going to ask is really, really important. And it is one that can actually be the strongest pullback, the strongest holdback of your experience in, quote, failing. And that is, how did the end result of your, quote, failed efforts help you to avoid threatening or even abandoning people from your past or your present? How did the end result of your failed efforts keep you from threatening or even abandoning people from your past or your present? Because I'm going to use the Brown Derby example. Had I signed that contract, and had I sat in that room where there were pictures of old-time actors like Betty Grable and Clark Gable and
Lana Turner
and all those people, I would have had to have left behind a lifestyle that those people who I had made commitments to unknowingly were still living and moved into, to use a metaphor, moved into the big fancy house on the hill. What would that have taken from me to do? To become not who I used to be, and to leave behind, and I don't mean leave behind in some sense that you never talk to them, but in a real emotional way, leave behind those from whence you came. Now, a lot of times, you will get parents and teachers and relatives and neighborhood people encouraging you to go on, and that's a different story. But believe it or not, that doesn't happen as often as the movies would make us believe. Most people really, really struggle to move from one domain or one dimension of their life to another. So if I had stayed in the Brown Derby, I would have been abandoning an entire lifestyle, and a lot of people find that very difficult and many find it impossible to do. And if you really want to succeed beyond where you are now and get out of your stuck places, that is something you might have to consider, because if you don't, that may be the unconscious trap that keeps you pinned where you are.
Well, and we're going to give you a lot of techniques that you can use to break through. But before we do, we want to review your answers to the questions we've just asked you. So question number one was, how did the end result of your failed efforts reflect back to you something you were told about yourself, your value, about the world, about the ways of the world, or mirrored some way you were treated when you were growing up? We're going to give a few examples just to tickle your imagination, just to try to trigger what might have happened. We hope that you will continue to consider this long after tonight's call. But were you told anything like, you'll never amount to much? And remember that this could be anybody. It could be a neighbor. It could be a teacher. It could be a coach. It doesn't have to be parents. It doesn't have to be family. But if it got in, if it mattered to you, if it got stuck in your unconscious, it's in there working its way. So how about, no one will want to marry you because, well, my dad said to me, no one will want to marry you because you get up and have breakfast before everybody else. Well, I didn't get married till I was in my early 40s. That's a much bigger story than that. Who do you think you are? How often do we hear somebody say to a kid, who do you think you are? You're too big for your own britches. Or, you're such a good mama's boy. Well, the implication of being a good mama's boy or a good mama's girl is you need to stay a boy. You can't grow up. You have to take care of your mama. Or, you'll always be your daddy's little girl. Again, the implication is you're not allowed to grow up. You have to stay your daddy's little girl. There are any number of 1,000 possibilities with subtle instructions about who you were and who you were supposed to remain in order to comply with the environment you grew up in. And a lot of this happened when you were very tiny, when you were 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old. You couldn't even begin to decipher what was true, what was not true, who had the right way to look at this, or whether you were even permitted to disagree with the input that was coming to you. I want to make it clear here, we're not blaming anyone, but there is no such thing as perfect parenting or perfect grandparenting. We're all in this together. Everybody is imperfect, and people are handing down how they were treated generation after generation. We are hoping to trigger you tonight to recognize you can break out of it. You can get past whatever your stuck place may be.
Now, you've often heard that in order to succeed, you have to change your beliefs because what you believe is what you draw to you. And that's absolutely true. That is absolutely true. The law of attraction in that sense works. What you believe is what you will create in your life. But what you don't hear often, as a matter of fact, almost never, is that the belief exists on two levels. You can change your cognitive belief. You can change your cognitive belief, and that is you can say, well, I'm not going to believe in that particular principle anymore. But if you haven't explored your unconscious, that the unconscious will always trump the consciousness because the unconscious is more powerful for one reason, because you can't see it, because it's unconscious and it's working outside of your control. But that's why we say you don't go exploring into your past to see, oh, what happened back when I was then. Pay attention to what's going on right now, because the result of whatever happened back then is being manifested right now in your life. If you're stuck somehow, you can do affirmations. Excuse me. You can do affirmations to say, I'm no longer stuck. I'm no longer stuck. But if you don't understand the unconscious structure of what's going on, you can say those affirmations till the cows come home, but the unconscious will always trump it. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't say the affirmations, but you also have to know there's another dimension here that's rarely discussed in these issues of change your mind, because change your mind is utterly real. If you don't change your mind, you will continue to attract what you've always attracted.
All right, number 2, the question we asked you was, how did the end result of your failed efforts keep you in the same lifestyle as that of your family and neighborhood where you grew up, rather than moving into change beyond your roots? Well, maybe you failed a job interview because if you'd succeeded, you would have been required to move out of state, maybe out of the country. You would have been required to change in some way that internally, unconsciously, wasn't permitted. Maybe you were being given an amazing salary and budget that, again, didn't match where you came from. It was too much. And you somehow did something during the interview, like, pulling out a stick of chewing gum and unconsciously starting to chew gum, so you wrecked it for yourself.
By the way, that's a story that we know from someone we've worked with. That's not just an example. That's a fact.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I moved back from New York after I'd had a huge success there doing commercials because I thought I needed to meet somebody to marry and I was going to find that person in L.A. Well, that was not the reason. So we want you to just consider how your failed efforts may have kept you from falling in love with someone you knew was outside the picture your family could envision. These are just examples to help trigger your thinking.
Another example, well, the third question we ask is, how did the end result of your, quote, failed efforts keep you feeling similar feelings about yourself like you felt perhaps when you were in high school or even earlier or even in college or even when you were 40? Depending upon where you are in your life. Because when you, quote, failed again this time around, did you feel depressed like you did when you were a teen or early 20s? Or did you feel scared like you did when you first started dating, for example, or when you had your first job? Because what happens with the unconscious until it is understood that what you are doing, for example, when I was failing in high school and college, never literally failing, but going from the top to the bottom, and I didn't know that was going on, it continues to replicate itself. And that's why you're stuck. I want to repeat that. It continues to replicate itself. It produces the same results, and that's why you're stuck. And you can say, as I said before, over and over again, I don't want to be stuck, I don't want to be stuck. But if you don't understand how it is that you are actually becoming and being stuck, you will remain there because there is no other choice. Your psyche has been structured in such a way that it yields particular results. That's why you have to change your beliefs, because you have to change literally the configuration of your mind. And when we use the term change your mind, we mean it in a very deep sense. You must change your mind in order to get to where you want to go beyond where you are now.
All right, and the last question we asked you is, how did the end result of your failed efforts help you to avoid threatening or even abandoning people from your past or from your current present, even, that you didn't want to leave behind? And while this question is pivotal, we're focused on you avoiding the act of betrayal. Because should you live out your dreams of huge success, and you would have to betray those who told you to be careful and not get involved in big business, or betray those who said, no, that's not for you, that's not the right sales game for you, you have to decide for yourself, I need to move on. I need to make my own way. It doesn't matter what they said. We'll arrive at a new relationship together, but I must make my own way. I married Jim after 30 years of being my parents' good daughter. There's a long story here about my unconscious loyalty to the fact that my parents really didn't want me to get married. But I had to open that up for myself about a year and a half before I met Jim. I saw clearly how I'd been holding myself back. I wasn't even really available to be marrying someone. That was how loyal I was unconsciously.
And in the very same way, I got a PhD, but until I freed myself, and that PhD was a measure of my success and my movement forward, I was also loyal, and I kept people comfortable. My father, and I keep going back to him because he was the central figure in my life. When he said, you're going to go to this Jesuit high school, that was very sincere from him. He really wanted me to go to this Jesuit high school. He just didn't want me to be the other genius in the house. And he didn't want me to be the possibility of my being an alpha male along with him, because that's what he was. So there was an atmosphere in the house that says, yes, go do that. And that's what makes people so crazy. It's called mixed messages. Yes, go do that, but not really. Go do that, but not really. And you have to come to terms with that sort of thing. And when you make the move to say, I am going to leave, there is a sense of betrayal that follows it. And it's a real sense, and that's often what keeps people in place, because they don't want to experience those feelings.
So as we said, you are always succeeding. The question is, at what? And when you really get that you are never really failing, that you're always succeeding. The question is, at what? Then you do not have to go down into the dumper. You do not have to feel hopeless. You do not have to feel powerless. You can examine what is going on, what you are being loyal to, and you can change it. Now, the question is, what else can you do besides examining the pattern in order to help yourself throw off those old patterns and break through the resistance to moving ahead? And we're going to say more about breaking through resistance in just a moment. What can you do to throw off those old patterns? And we encourage you not to go exploring the past in any big depth.
Judith and I both come from therapy. We are both therapists and received a lot of therapy. So we are not saying this from a position of being naive or from a position of being outside of that community. And what we're going to tell you is that in a lot of instances, therapy is a large waste of time. I am not saying it's entirely so, because it focuses too much on what has happened. You have to look at where you are now as the source of where it is that will lead you, and oftentimes it leads you to the past, but you can't start there, because I'm going to tell you, unless you dedicate your life to that experience, that's a black hole. That is a black hole. That's why we asked you, for example, what is your present situation? And what is it that's going on in the present that you can trace, because your patterns are most clearly seen in the present. You can't see them back there, but you can see them now, and the relationship to those patterns is the fact that they keep reiterating themselves because there's nothing else they can do until they are changed. Okay, we've got a number of tips now to give you in terms of what to do to break out of your being stuck and break through your resistance.
Select a destination that is large enough to move you out beyond from where you are now. A destination, a goal. Please establish something you are really committed to doing that is large enough to propel your action forward. You have to bring yourself through this. It may be a struggle. Stay focused on your goal. It will keep you energized and motivated. You have to make a commitment to do that.
And it will surely bring up the struggle if it's a goal that is large enough that it will lead, it will take you beyond where you are and where you've been. And that's part of the process. There's nothing here that's free. You don't get to go 40 days and 40 nights in the desert and not have to experience that. That is always there. There are spiritual teachers from across time who have said, and I'm paraphrasing them, of course, and they said basically, you don't get spiritual advancement. You don't get any kind of advancement without paying some kind of a price. The struggle will be there, but that's an indication that things are actually happening. Now, you have to make a commitment to leave home. And by leave home, I mean not just move to another city or another town, but to leave and uproot and dissemble the commitments that you have made to your past, to certain people in the past, and then thereby change your mind. So in the present, watch for your excuses. Watch for your excuses. They are huge in telling you what it is you're trying to hold on to. Pay attention to your distractions, your rationalizations, your fantasies, anything that would sabotage your intent, because they are loaded with clues as to what it is that's holding you back. And you cannot be afraid to leave things behind. Sometimes that's painful, and sometimes it's very painful, but if you don't allow it to happen, you are going to stay where you are.
Ask for help. I can't underscore this enough, because a lot of us, the majority of us, have grown up in ways that have taught us not to ask for help, that we think we have to do it on our own, or that it would be beneath us to ask for help. And that is simply a bunch of nonsense. None of us succeed on our own in isolation. We must have the help of people who are in advance of us, who can help us.
We go to conventions now, not necessarily because we're going specifically to learn something, although we always do, but now we're at a point where we are making all kinds of connections. And how do we make connections? We go and talk to people, and we say, this is what we have to offer. What do you have to offer? We actually make ourselves available to make the exchange happen. That's a way of asking for help.
And it also, when you ask for help, helps you break out of any kind of self-centered concern. You know, we all have to work on that. And you get to open yourself and see that everybody else is on their search. Everybody else is going through their commitment to a new destiny. Hey, join forces. Get help from other people.
Another tip is to receive. Now, you know, when people give you things, you have to be able to take it in. Consciously receive it. For example, take each step of your success and each step that you achieve and receive it. Take it in. Let it become part of who you are. Let it change who you are. And that's no small matter. No matter how small the success or achievement is, that is no small matter, because what happens a lot is that people don't actually take in their successes, and they keep being hungry. They keep being hungry for the successes. They keep wanting something to happen when, in fact, it's happening all around them, and you never get from 0 to 100 in one success leap. You have to build your way there. And if you're not taking in your successes as you go along, you will never get to the 100 because you have no foundation from which to come.
And a way that you can do homework on this is to practice receiving compliments, praise, help, any of that. Receive every time you get a compliment. Do not brush it off. Do not play it down. All right, another thing you can do is create a mastermind group. Join forces with 2 or 3 other people who also are striving for greater success and help each other. Become a force for support of each other, and together you will do wonders.
And finally, watch for miracles. Now, we're not saying that in any kind of New Age way. We're serious. Watch for miracles. And what are those miracles? They're synchronicities. They're improbabilities. Because once you start to change, things are going to start lining up in the world, and that is an absolute fact. When you change your mind, the world lines up to meet you. Now, that may be a kind of grandiose way to say it, but what happens is when you start to change your mind, you start seeing differently than you were before. You start making yourself available to different opportunities than you were, and things start to happen. They seem to just fall out of the sky. They seem to fall out of the trees. Watch for the miracles, because when the synchronicities and the improbabilities start to happen, you know that you're on your way toward them, because they are making themselves available to you. And it indicates that there is such newness in your life that it's a complete indication that you are breaking free, and that's the whole point. You cannot succeed unless you are a success. We used to say to the actors we worked with in California, you can't be a star until you're a star. People in California who don't work are actually internally not ready for work, even though they'll tell you again and again and again, the actors, that they are, and we know because we've been there. So watch for the miracles. That is foundational to moving forward.
And to put a capper on everything we've just said about how you can help yourself succeed beyond anything you are imagining right now is, you must be the person who authorizes your excellence, your capability, your success. It's not going to come to you from the outside. You have to establish in your own mind and to the minds of everyone around you your authority, your greatness, your largeness in the world.
So we will complete our presentation to you with the question and the statement that we made earlier. And the statement, if you take nothing from tonight but this, there is no such thing as failure. You are always succeeding. The question is, at what?